Good evening, everyone. Let's look at a passage this evening. James chapter 5, almost ending the book of James. A text reads, James 5 verses 1 through 6. Go to now, you rich men, weep and howl for your miseries that shall come upon you. Your riches are corrupted and your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver is cankered, and the rust of them shall be a witness against you, and shall eat your flesh as it were fire. You have heaped treasure together for the last days. Behold, the hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields, which is of you kept back by fraud, crieth. And the cries of them which have reaped are entered into the ears of the Lord of the Sabbath. You have lived in pleasure on the earth and been wanton. You have nourished your hearts as in the days of slaughter. You have condemned and killed the just. Very powerful passage, James. And here James is warning rich people, as we see, in the church, for their coming judgment. And, you know, I read so many commentaries, and they were like debating on that this is not written to Christians. This was written to unsaved people. You know, saying as if that people in the church can't be rich, and rich people cannot have this kind of lifestyle, a Christian person. But I think we have the weight of evidence of the scriptures, and we have warning after warning almost throughout the Bible for rich Christians and how they should live in this present evil age. And we can fall into that trap that James is talking about here. So here he opens up with the same phrase, go to now, as he did in James chapter 4:13. And if going back, as Pastor Adam covered last time, the context was worldliness. And they were becoming unfaithful by living, becoming friends of the world. And that is that calls to committing spiritual adultery with God. So we see here that these rich men definitely were his readers, who were Christians, and who were he is actually pronouncing a judgment upon them, not because they are rich. We should understand that, because it's not because they are rich that this judgment is coming upon them. The judgment is coming upon them because how they used their wealth, and that was in a very worldly manner, in a worldly way of living. So the word go to now is actually saying, is a phrase of pay attention. You rich people in the church, pay attention. And it means that listen to what I am about to say, is the expression actually. It's found in many places in the Old Testament. So James here focuses on attack on the unfaithful Christians who are rich in material possessions. And see how he starts, weep and howl. I mean, you know, this is the last thing that, you know, the world can, a worldly rich person can even think of, like weep and howl. But James is saying weep and howl, like you are rich and, you know, why do you want to weep and howl, you know? They have everything they need. But he's saying weep, why? Because he goes on to say, for your miseries. For your miseries that shall come upon you. So this tells me that it is not because they are just rich. It is because of the way they are behaving and living their lives and doing what they are doing for their personal gain with the wealth they have. So James, throughout this passage as we read, he keeps the idea of future judgment before his readers. The word weep means begin to cry. And the word howl basically means cry out in pain. And Why is he saying that? Because he's saying that the way you are behaving and the way you are living, there is a great judgment coming, approaching upon you. In Isaiah 13:6, it says, for the day of the Lord is at hand. It shall come as a destruction from the Almighty. So these calamities are coming to them from the Lord in that day when they stand before Jesus Christ in the coming judgment. And this is the context, James 5, 8, 9, later on in this verse, he's saying the judge stands before the door. And they have lost the perspective of the coming judgment. So what should we do? Yeah. Should I go on? Oh, wait. I have one. I can take this also. Yeah, I can see now. So he says in James 5, 8, he says, be ye also patient, establish your heart, for the coming of the Lord draws near. Grudge not one against another, brethren, lest ye be condemned. Behold, the judge stands before the door. The word howl actually is in present active participle, and it basically describes the pain of certain judgment that is impending upon them. And this is so true because in Galatians 6, 1, it says, do not be deceived. God is not mocked, for whatsoever you sow, you will reap. So what these rich men are sowing, they are going to surely reap. And there is an impending judgment upon them that is on its way. It's on its way to them. And that's why their profit, their money, their wealth and riches is not going to do anything good to them in that day. They cannot bribe God and show him that I have so much of wealth and acquired so much of riches, and they will get away. No, they will be troubled immensely in that day. Because God does not care about how much money we have or how much wealth, possession, property we have. He doesn't care about that. What he cares about is what is our spiritual condition. And that's what he said in Revelation 3:17. He says, because thou sayest, I am rich and increased with good and have need of nothing and knowest not that thou art wretched. This is the same word, miserable. Thou art wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. So God is seeing not the wealth of these rich people. He's seeing their spiritual condition. He's saying, you have so much of wealth and everything, but man, you are spiritually miserable and poor and you can't even see. You are naked and you are blind. You are so deceived in thinking that you have great security saved for you for future. Riches will not profit in that day. Riches will do nothing, just nothing in that day. So doesn't matter how much we have today. The riches are just for this age. That's all. Proverbs 11:4. Riches profit not in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivereth from death. So there is a contrast between riches and righteousness. What is going to count in that day is righteousness. And it is righteousness that is going to save us from the wrath of God, not riches. So he wants them to know that no matter how wealthy they are or how easy life is in this present age, it will not last. So the things in which the rich have placed their trust, you know, their comfort and ease, basically saying has no value whatsoever. That is powerful. That's really something. And we see the whole world running after riches, wealth. It is just like, a cat chasing a mouse. That's all they're doing, you know. And, you know, one day it's not going to matter how filthy rich they are and how much property they have all over the place in the world. And see what he says. He's saying, he uses this term. He says, your riches are corrupted, means perishes. Your garments are moth eaten. Your gold and silver is cankered, mean rust down or corroded. So he's saying that these are going to perish. Or in other words, he uses perfect tense, that they are on the verge of perishing, you know. And he goes on to say also that, and the rust of them shall be a witness against you. So basically, the only thing about these riches that they're going to do at the judgment seat is that they're going to stand as a witness against you because of the rust that is on that, which means that you just heaped it and saved it for your own pleasure and never used it for God's glory and where it was supposed to be used. And it will consume you. It said, as a fire, as it were a fire, it will consume you. So judgment is going to consume. So their misery is coming because they are, what, storing riches in this age, but actually they are storing wrath for themselves in the age to come. In Romans 2:5 it says, but after thy hardness and impenitent heart, treasureth up unto thyself wrath against the day of wrath and revelation of the righteous judgment of God. So they are storing up, you know, we, after knowing this, you know, we should have a right perspective about wealth. It is nothing wrong that if in this room we have people who will become rich or are rich, you know, it would not be wrong, but we should not lose the perspective of what these riches are actually and what is going to happen. I think 2 Peter 3:10, Peter says us clearly, the day of the Lord will come like a thief. It will be a day on which the heavens will pass away with a rushing noise and elements be destroyed in the fierce heat. And the earth and all the works of man utterly burnt up. That's, he's saying, like, everything that they probably have gained and built and worked hard, the towers they have probably built and the, you know, the bank statement that they have, you know, it's risen up to, you know, beyond their thinking. Burned, everything is going to be burnt up. Since all these things are thus predestined to dissolution, what sort of men ought you to be found to be in all holy living and godly conduct? So this passage tells us where our focus really should be. It should be on holy living and godly conduct. And also it tells us what should be our perspective regarding wealth. Dissolution. Dissolving is going to be destroyed. So James now is going on to tell us what worldly attitude they had developed and they were living with the wealth they had acquired. And he goes on to specify their sins or their crimes, you know. And, you know, here he says, you have heaped treasure together for the last days. That's the first thing he says. So the Bible does not condemn wealth or people with wealth, but it surely gives strong warning against the dangers of it and the pursuit of acquiring this wealth. You know, Abraham was rich, and we know he was a godly man. He was rich. In Genesis 13:2, it says Abraham was very rich in cattle and in silver and in gold. And we can see that this was a blessing from God, because, you know, wealth comes from God. Proverbs 10:22 says, the blessing of the Lord, it maketh rich. But, you know, something about Abraham I really like, his life. He always had a disinterest regarding material possession. You know, I don't see him ever thinking about increasing the cattle, or, you know, increasing men servant or maid servant, or gold and silver. We never see him. He is just occupied and focused with the coming kingdom and the land of Canaan. And you know what? God is blessing him. And you know, Abimelech gave him so much of riches. And then there was one point that King Sodom actually was trading with him and saying, you know what, you give me your people, the army, and I will give you all the spoils of Sodom. And you know, Abraham said, he said, I won't take a thread or a sandal or a sandal strap. I won't take anything that is yours so that you will never be able to say, I made you rich. So we see that, you know, Abraham has disinterest. And that's, you know, that's how a real Christian should live. God blesses him with riches. He uses for what it is in this age in a proper manner. But he keeps on going. He's not occupied. Oh my goodness, my bank balance has come down. You know, oh man, I need to make it go up. You know, I need to keep it this. I have to maintain this level. You know, I need to have this so much lack of rupees in my bank account. That's my goal, my aim. People have this pursuit, you know. But Abraham was not like that. So it is not riches that are wrong, but here's the thing. The desire to be rich. That brings many danger. But I think, you know what, riches should not be a goal. But it can be a byproduct of your endeavors. You know, God, it can be a byproduct, but it should not be my occupation. You know, I think that's the real balance. So if you're good at business or you're good at work or something and God blesses you with wealth, you know, amen, great. And we'll see other things, how we can use that in this age for God's glory. Now, you know, we might be thinking in this room that, you know, of course I'm not rich. And I think being rich is a relative term. For a person who's living in a slum, I might be rich in his eyes, right? And the person who's living in the slum and the one who's living on the road, in the streets, that guy who's living in the slum is rich for him, right? But I think the Bible tells us who is rich. In 1 Timothy 6:6 says, but godliness with contentment is great gain. Why? Because why contentment is a great gain with the godliness is because for we brought nothing into this world and it is certain. We miss that word. It is certain. It is sure. Confirmed. We can carry nothing out. And having food and raiment, let us be there with content. So if we have this temporal need met, food, clothing, shelter, and anything above that we have, we are rich. We are really rich. Yeah. Yeah. May not be rich as Bill Gates or the other film stars and all, but in God's eye, we are rich. But they that will be rich, now this is not saying that, you know, you be rich, that's, you know, it's wrong. But it's saying the one who is desiring to be rich and he makes his goal to be rich, he will fall into temptation and a trap or snare and into many foolish and hurtful lusts which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all evil. It doesn't say the money is the root of all evil, but the love of money, which correlates with the desire to be rich. Which while some coveted after, this is exactly what he's saying, the one who's trying to be rich will be rich is someone who's coveting after or desiring after, have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through many sorrows. So therefore we should have no gain seeking anxiousness. We should not have that because, you know, we bring nothing and we carry nothing out of this world. And this is, you know, what breeds discontentment. It's right here. It's gain seeking, worries. So James is saying that this is going to be one day destroyed. In Proverbs 18:11, it says, you know, why they are, it says that their sin was heaping treasures. And they were heaping treasures in the last days. And we know last days has begun after Jesus Christ's return, and it will end at his coming, second coming, when judgment will happen. So it's going to dissolve. Christ is going to come and he's going to judge how you live, not how much you have. Then what is the point of heaping the treasure, accumulating wealth? You know, I think that why the riches, why people accumulate wealth? Because it really gives them a sense of security. That's the bottom thing, you know. They want to have a particular, you know, fixed deposit, recurring deposit. I'm not saying it's wrong to save for future. And that, the Bible doesn't say that you should not save for future. You should be wise. But that's not my whole goal. That just keep accumulating in the bank or wherever. And that's my whole point. That's because of for the security reasons. Because you know what? This currency is just paper. I know many years ago, India we had currency and that was called off, and it just was lying. I remember my dad. It was in my days, my dad when he was young, and he had a lot of wealth, you know, cash at that time. He had taken all the currency and he'd made wallpapers in the house because that currency you had was no more valid. So we don't know. You can accumulate so much of, you know, rupees, and you know, one day it's no more, you know. So anyways, Proverbs 18:11 says, the wealth of rich is the city of his strength, and as a wall set on a high. But where? In his own imagination. So in his thinking, he's saying, like, okay, money, wealth is going to keep me, give me security in the future. So the rich looks to their asset for income, for help. And you know, if we really appreciate this verse, if we understand the, if we know what is the verse above that. And the verse above that, it is 18:10, is actually this. The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous runneth into it and is safe. So the righteous person trusts in the Lord, and the rich, he trusts in his riches. That's a contrast here. So wealth, actually, the riches has is temporal. We should get this point that it is temporal. It's not going to go with us. It's not permanent. It's just for this age. That's all. Psalm 49:6, I really like this. It says, they that trust in their wealth and boast themselves in the multitude of their riches, none of them can by any means redeem his brother, nor give to God a ransom for him. Verse 9, that he should still live forever and not see corruption. So you can't buy death with money. life. For he seeth that the wise men die, likewise the fool and the brutish person perish. And what? Leave their wealth to others. And listen to this. And in their inward thought is that their houses shall continue forever. And their dwelling places to all generations. They call their lands after their own names. Nevertheless, man being in honor abides not. He is like a beast that perishes. So this is telling us that it is temporal. It's not going to continue forever. So wealth, in one sense, is a good tool for us to use here. But it should not become our occupation. It should not become our goal. Otherwise, it can become a dangerous trap, which when we adopt a worldly perspective about the wealth. And this is how the world lives. They are accumulating. They are just husband, wife, going out of the house. They are working and slogging and working to just make sure that they have enough for the future. They have a retirement planned and etc. So it makes no sense to accumulate wealth when you cannot really use it, because you just leave it to others. And the focus of this passage is the verb, you have stored up. That's the focus. So James is showing us the foolishness of heaping wealth. And if you accumulate riches, you miss the whole point. You miss the point of understanding that this is temporal in nature. It's temporal in nature. And what really God is giving you the money for? Jesus said this, showed us the foolishness of hoarding wealth. In Luke 12, in 13, he says, there was one person came to Jesus and said, "Now, Jesus, tell that you know my brother that our inheritance would be divided." And Jesus said, "Am I made the judge to divide your inheritance?" And then he goes on to say this: "Be careful." In verse 15, he told the people, "Be careful to guard yourselves from every kind of greed." Now, what the issue is here? Inheritance, property. And you know what? Today, family dispute, 85% is inheritance, property. Especially in Goa, I've heard. Brother killing another brother and, you know, fights because of inheritance. He told the people, "Be careful to guard yourself from every kind of greed." And I like this phrase: life is not about having a lot of material possessions. That's not life all about. This present life is not all about that. But, you know, the people in the world are living this life because they don't have anything else to look for. Just this life. They're pursuing the present object as their chief, which is going to be only their good. And you know what? A Christian can become like that. So he illustrates this. He says, a rich man had land that produced good crops. He thought, "What should I do? I don't have enough room to store up my crops." He said, "I know that I will do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones so that I can store all my grain and goods in them. Then I'll say to myself, 'You have stored up a lot of good things for years to come. Take life easy, eat, drink, and enjoy yourself.'" That's the slogan, right, of this world. "But God said to him, 'You fool, you fool, I will demand your life from you tonight. Now who will get what you have accumulated?'" That's how it is when a person has material riches but is not rich in his relationship with God. So this telling me the life is not about having a lot of material possessions and things. So don't be discouraged if you don't own a house. You know, who cares, you know? Who cares, you know? And or if we don't have a bank balance. But we know one thing, that the Lord is my shepherd and he will provide when and as and when I need. That's what I should think. You know, we generally worry about, like, you know, okay, what happened to my kids in education and this and that? What will happen, you know? I say, you know what, just work the best you can. If you can make provision for future, that's fine. If you can't, trust God, but don't use, you know, illegal means to try to acquire that wealth. You know, trust God. That's the life of faith. That's the life of faith. So what is life about then? Well, he answers here. He says the life is about having a rich relationship with God. That's life about, what is about. It's being rich towards God. So let's not seek after temporal things, temporal needs. In Matthew 6:31, it says, "Then do not be full of care, saying, 'What are we to have for food or drink? Or with what may we be clothed?'" And really, this is like, you know, general natural need. And people are worried about it, right? And even Christians are worried about it. But they never look back and see, like, all this while, who provided them with these things? It was God. And full of care is the word, basic. Full of care is the word worry or anxious. The Gentiles go in search of all these things. So this is the world's way, a Gentile's way of living. They go after these things. They are seeking after these things. And they are naturally seeking after these things. That's the aspiration in life. But what we are supposed to do, in verse 33, it says, Oh, by the way, he says, for your Father in heaven has knowledge that you have need of all these things, but let your first care be for his kingdom and his righteousness. And all these other things will be given to you in addition. And God will give. If he gives. If he doesn't give, amen. Who cares? So Gentiles are what? They are money-making machines. Really, they have sacrificed their time with their children, their wives, enjoying a good quality of life, and running from morning 6 to in the night 10 and back to the clock again, and that's how they live. Proverbs 27:24, for riches are not forever, nor the crown from generation to generation. So the king that wears a crown is not sure if he will always wear the crown, or his children are going to wear the crown. You know, it's same with riches. You don't know. You might have. I know, like person who was filthy rich at one point of time, and today he's a pauper. He doesn't have anything. It's gone. It's fleeting. You never know when it's gone. You know. Proverbs 23:4-5. It says, "Labor not to be rich." So this is talking about becoming rich and laboring and working hard to just become rich. It's not telling you that don't labor. We are to labor and be diligent, but not to be rich. We are to labor to provide for our families, for our living. That's all. So let's not store up wealth in this age, in this life, but store wealth for yourselves in heaven. That was Jesus' advice to us. In Matthew 6:19, he says, "Lay not up for yourselves treasure upon earth, where moth and rust does corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasure in heaven. Neither moth nor rust does corrupt, and where thieves do not break through or steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also." So this is our motivation here, that the treasure of the earth is for a season. That's our motivation to not have. Because why? The moth, it will be moth-eaten, rusted, corrupted, and thieves can come and break in. You know, we have had cases like it. Remember, like, whole entire life's worth of gold gone in one night. You know, so, can you imagine that? Like, oof. Anyways, and also we have the opposite side of motivation. Store up your treasure in heaven, where it will not be destroyed. It will not be destroyed. I think of it like, you know, like we are doing. Yeah, we don't own house here, but we are living in a rented house. So I don't have the heart or mind to invest in the house and make it more nicer and beautiful, because it doesn't belong to me. I know I'll be out, right? But if I had my own house, I would like invest and make it much better, and, you know, keep doing that, right? Because I know it's going to be with me forever. I mean, till I live or my children. So that's the thing. We are living in a rented, I mean, this money, wealth is rented. Basically, we don't want to use it and make it, because the treasure of heaven is a permanent thing. Treasure of earth is temporal. So we should have the same attitude, that, you know, it means that we are using. And the treasure in heaven, what is? It's not a vague thing. Treasure in heaven is not like just, you know, having an intimate relationship with God and, you know, praying. It's defined for us in Matthew 19. The treasure in heaven, Jesus asked the rich man, rich young ruler, and said, he asked, "What do I lack? I want to enter the kingdom." And Jesus said, "If you will be perfect, go and sell that you have and give it to the poor, and thou shalt have treasure in heaven." Same phrase. And in verse 23, he says, what treasure in heaven is to enter the kingdom of heaven. That's, which is, of course, that which is sitting on thrones and judging and ruling in Matthew 19:28. So we see that we should store up our treasure, not in this age, but in the heaven. And we'll see it shortly. Now, in the other sin that these rich people had was in the way they had acquired, they were acquiring this wealth. And it was, they had actually robbed the poor, the people who were working in their fields. They were not giving them wages, proper wages, or undercut basically. They kept back by fraud so that they can increase in their riches. And this is showing that their way of acquiring wealth was in a wrong way. And this is how they were increasing in wealth. So, and this is exactly what the world is all about, right? They just don't become rich, as right? They use dishonest ways to become rich. And I don't know how honesty will make us rich quicker. Yes, but honesty can make us rich through God's blessing. But if you want to be quicker, hasty to be rich, then there is only one way, is dishonest means. Proverbs 22:16 says, "He that oppresseth the poor to increase his riches, and he that giveth to the rich shall surely come to want." Wow. I mean, he increases in riches, but he will come to a want. That's great contrast. Because how they were increasing in riches. Jeremiah 22:13, it says, "Woe unto him that builds his house by unrighteousness, and his chambers by wrong, that useth his neighbor's service without wages, and giveth him not for his work. But thine eyes and thine heart are not but for thy covetousness, and for to shed innocent blood, and for oppression, and for violence to do it." So the wealthy people, they step on other people so that they can become rich. I see one case, Ahab. Remember Ahab? He really loved Naboth's vineyard. And he so much desired, he wanted that badly. And he went and told his wife, Jezebel, I want this. It's just beautiful. And Naboth was not ready to give. And you know what they did? Had him killed to acquire his property. And this is what people are doing today. So rich in the world gain wealth this way. Means that are not right. Proverbs 22:22, "Rob not the poor because he is poor, neither oppress the afflicted in the gate, for the Lord will plead their cause, and spoil the soul of those that spoil them." I like this verse because it's saying the Lord watches everything. So, we are not here if we are, someone has stolen from us or cheated us, the Lord has seen it. And it's saying that the promise here is that the Lord will spoil them that have spoiled you. So we can take that comfort. The Lord will take him who make all things equal and proper. So what are some ways that we should make sure that we don't fall into this trap to go and earn in a wrong way? Jeremiah 17:11, it says, "As the partridge sitteth on eggs and hatcheth them not, so he that gets riches and not by right shall leave them in the midst of his days, and at his end shall be a fool." Proverbs 21:6 says, "The getting of treasures by a lying tongue." So you can get treasures by lying, by giving promises and showing them things that are really not true, and make money. "It is vanity tossed to and fro from that of them that seeketh death." So that's a wrong way. If you have to lie to make money, then that's a wrong way. Proverbs 28:8, it says, "He that by usury and unjust gain increaseth his substance." Usury word is, getting interest or more than extorting, getting more than it's needed. Proverbs 13:11, "Wealth gotten by vanity," that is dishonest means, "shall be diminished." So this is really so nice. Like he's saying, why you want to acquire wealth in the wrong way when it's going to diminish if you do it that way? It might increase, for some time, but it's going to ultimately diminish, in this life itself. "But he that gathereth by labor," that's the key, "by labor shall increase. So there is a right way to gain wealth, and although we should not look for it, but there is a right way, and that is Proverbs 28:20, a faithful man shall abound with blessings. The faithful man is someone who is blameless. You can't point at him and say, you know what, he's a cheater. You know, he steals and he robs and he does all kind of things to get to earn money. He fools people and, you know, does says lies. And so faithful man abounds with blessing. Proverbs 10:4, it says, he becometh poor that deals with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent maketh rich. Diligent means work hard and be good, and God blesses you. And even if he chooses to keep you poor, say amen. Oh, by the way, if you're eating food and having clothes, you are not poor, right? You're rich anyways. The third sin of these people are, and this is another trap we can really get into. When really money starts coming in, or wealth starts coming in, the standard of living goes higher, right? That's the danger trap, goes higher. And then what? Then to maintain that standard, and if your income goes down, and to maintain that standard, you have to do all other things to come up to the standard. Because how can you come down of that standard? So the best thing is keep the standard same all the time, whether you have or don't have. He says here, their sin in James 5:5, you have lived in pleasure on the earth and been wanton. You have nourished your heart as in the day of slaughter. And the literal translation says, you lived luxuriously on the earth and lived for self pleasure. They go together. You nourished. The word nourish actually is you pampered yourself, your heart as in day of slaughter. So living luxuriously, extravagant, right? And they are like, they people have, you know, most expensive car, gold rings and suits. Even, I mean, Christian preachers we see on the TV, and you know, they are decked up with, like, you know, lavishly, you know. That would be wrong. I mean, having luxury little here and there, you know, for, because I think God has said, like, you know, 1 Timothy 6:17, God who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. So you might have some things in moderation to enjoy. That's not wrong. But excess is wrong. Like, you know, one Proverbs 25:16, it says, have you found honey? Eat only what you need, that you not have it in excess and vomit it. And honey in the days of Solomon was a luxury, you know. So he's saying, if you found honey, take it in moderation. Otherwise, and I think that's how we should have with our wealth. In moderation and not in excess, not abusing it. So the rich here, they are living luxuriously and they are spending upon their own self. The best brand they can have, the best things that they can have. Nothing wrong again to have brand, you know, and but, you know, going in a very, very lavish, and I mean the Bible doesn't say that this is luxury and this is not, and that is, you know, we have to decide, and we have to see by faith that we are not tapping into that scene. Luke 16:25 says, but Abraham said, son, remember that thou in thy lifetime received thy good things, and likewise Lazarus evil things, but now he is comforted and thou art tormented. Now why was this rich man, was he tormented because he was rich? No, because see in Luke 19 it says, there was a rich man who habitually arrayed himself in purple and fine linen and enjoyed a splendid banquet every day. Or in literal translation says, there was a certain rich man and was accustomed to wear, I think, a purple robe and fine linen, making merry in luxury day by day. And he knew there was a poor man outside his gate and needy, and he never did anything about it. And he enjoyed and he spent it upon his own pleasure. I think this is a good verse in Amos 6. It's not in the notes, but I was looking this one. In Amos 6:1, luxurious living. Woe to them that are at ease in Zion and trust in the mountain of Samaria. And then verse 4, it says, that lie upon beds of ivory. That would be like extravagant, right? You know, not like wooden bed, but like ivory bed. Like a bed of gold. You know, that. Like, you know, they have today watches with real diamonds and gold plated. You know, phones now they have with 24 karat gold, and that would be too much, you know. That lie upon beds of ivory and stretch themselves upon their couches and eat the lambs out of the flock and the calves out of the midst of the stall, that chant to the sound of the viol and invent to themselves instruments of music like David, and drink wine bowls and anoint themselves with the chief ointment, but they are not grieved for the affliction of Joseph. So that's why James is saying that weep and howl because your affliction is coming. So in closing, being wanton here is basically to live for self-pleasure. That's what it means. And lived in pleasure is to live luxuriously or extravagant. And it is the same word is actually used in 1 Timothy 5:6. But she that liveth in pleasure is dead, while she liveth. So just as an animal is about to be slaughtered, he is completely oblivious that there is an impending slaughter coming upon him. And he is satisfying with the grain and with the food and making himself fat. And he continues to satisfy his appetite. So in the same way the rich are, they are continuing to satisfy their appetite and making themselves fat to be slaughtered at the judgment seat. So here's the principle. 1 Corinthians 7:30. They that buy as though they possess not, and they that use this world as not abusing it. For the fashion of this world passeth away. That's a balance. Buy not as if you're possessing. Use the world, use the wealth, but don't abuse it. You know, we have a choice. We have a choice to make. It really boils down to our choice. In Hebrews 11:24, we have Moses, who by faith, when he came to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He had everything at his disposal. And I like this verse, a word, choosing. He made a choice to rather suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. He knew it is just, the treasures of Egypt is just for a season. Esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasure in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. So that he was looking for a real wealth. Real wealth is, we have to wait for. It is in the age to come. So today we should choose that which will not be taken away from us. We want to take something and store up something that will not be taken away. Right? That is something that we can carry with us in the grave. And Mary was choosing that part. Luke 10:42. But one thing is needful. Mary had chosen that good part which shall not be taken away from her. She was sitting at the feet of Jesus and she was listening, hearing his words. And it shall not be taken away. A true treasure, Proverbs 15:6, in the house of righteous is much treasure. But in the revenues of the wicked is trouble. This proverb is so true. Like people are rich, they have everything that, but their house is full of trouble. Trouble. You know, I'm sure we all have people we know that are rich and have trouble. Proverbs 15:6, better is little. Better is little. Don't despise the little. Better is little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and trouble therewith. You don't want wealth because it will bring trouble also in your life. And I don't want trouble in my life. Really. And I think of that verse in Proverbs. He said, Lord, don't make me rich that I may forget you. Right? Don't make me poor that I may curse you. You know. So I think that's a good way of living and praying, that God, don't make me rich that I may forget you and I call trouble upon myself. So here's how I store up treasure in heaven. 1 Timothy 6:17, charge the rich in the present age. So this is command them, those who are rich in the present age, not to be high-minded. That's the first thing. Don't be high-minded that you have security, you have everything. Don't be occupied with your thoughts that, you know, how much I have and how much I don't have and how much I should make. Not to set hope on the uncertainty of riches, but in the living God, the one offering to us richly all things for enjoyment, to do good, to be rich in good works, to be ready to share and generous. So this is how I store up treasure in heaven. By doing good, by being rich in good works, and ready to share, distribute, and be generous in giving, treasuring away for themselves a good foundation for the coming age, that they may hold on age-lasting life. So that's, I think, the biblical perspective of how we should use our wealth. And God is angry with these wealthy people because of the way they are using their wealth and how they are living. There is a great wrath stored for them. So, amen.